You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Just a little winded running in from traffic. So we are live. So if you are one of those people out there on that bridge or on the highway, tune in, stay tuned in to WDIY. If you are ever outside of our listening area, you can always listen online at wdiy.org. and click listen online. Today is July 10th. The time has been flying. The markets were a bit flat today. The Dow closing at 15,291, the NASDAQ at 3520, and the S&P at 1652. Good evening, everyone. I'm trying to get my voice back. I think I was out last week, wasn't I, on vacation. It's very difficult to come back after being out for a week and coming back slightly sick. So if you are listening tonight, if you have financial questions, we would love to hear from you. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about some of the hot topics in financial planning, including women, which I said was one of the hot topics, interest rates, housing, and Social Security. We did have some fun with that. Tonight, we are discussing catching up. I figured I would just be coming back from vacation. I'd want to catch up with you, the listeners. I missed you. So hence the idea of catching up. Have you ever heard anyone ask about your catch-up contributions on your retirement account? Well, we will talk about that tonight. Also, how about talking about the importance of catching up on your credit card bills? How does that impact you? Some interesting numbers to run through for you with that. Do you ever catch up with your relatives? What I mean by that is catching up with them might include finding out where they are in their own financial lives, their own estate planning. Might you be included in those plans? If you are, you need to know a little bit of information, the kind of conversations you have to have with those relatives. How might being involved in your relatives' estate plans, or even in their long-term planning, might impact you? So several things to catch up on with. And again, if we have time at the end, I also want to mention that we had the, while I was away, the Defense of Marriage Act had been declared unconstitutional. So I want to hit on that a little bit and what that might mean to some of same-sex couples who are legally married in other states, or if you're thinking about it, what the impact might be for you. So I will hit on that at the end if I have time. So lots of things to talk about. If you have questions this evening, again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are here. We are live. Judy Ann is in the studio. She will answer your call. We ask that you to put the radio on mute so that you can talk with me without confusion, without delay. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she'll bring it into the studio. And I will do my best to answer. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. The number to call in is 610-758-8810, and email can also be used at yourfinancialchoices.com. And tonight's topic, again, is catching up. I do also want to just mention that I am battling a little bit of a cold. Just kind of started. I'm starting the echinacea and whatever else I can take to try to battle this. So I'd appreciate anybody who has calls can call in, talk live on air, give me a break from having to talk. It's always appreciated. It is a beautiful evening, but traffic is crazy out there. So let's talk about some of the things that we can catch up on. Catch up contributions affect those individuals who are age 50 or over at the end of the calendar year. You can make annual catch up contributions in your retirement accounts. And how much is a catch up contribution? You know, there's some little rules around that. So I want to go over those. And in fact, we can talk about the regular elective deferral as well. It's good to be reminded of how much we can do into our retirement accounts. And that is what I'm talking about, retirement accounts we have at work. It could be our 401k. It could be a 403b. There's a little plan out there called a SARSEP, governmental plans called 457bs. So we have catch-up contributions for those kinds of retirement plans. We also have some catch-up contributions for individual retirement accounts, IRAs. So if you don't have a retirement account through your employer, maybe you have an individual account on the side, there are catch-up contributions for you as well. But that is only applies to people who are age 50 or over at the end of the calendar year. So catch-up contributions are up to $5,500 in 2013. The same applied in 2012. And they are permitted, permitted by plans 401ks, other than a simple 401k. I really don't see simple 401ks all that often. Typically, you might see a very small employer who might have a simple 401k. And usually we see those with smaller employers because the administration cost of a simple 401k is much smaller than for that of a bigger plan. So if you are an employer yourself or you work for a small employer, maybe you don't have a plan, you might want to investigate this or talk to your employer or talk to your employees about maybe implementing a simple 401k that could give employees the opportunity to contribute that they otherwise might not have been able to. And the simple 401k is a little bit cheaper. So the catch-up contributions for a regular 401k, the 403b, the 457b, is $5,500 for people over age 50. The regular elective deferrals, they're not part of that catch-up contribution amount. And the amount for an elective deferral is $17,500 for those same type of plans. There may be some certain testing limits. So I'm just going to talk in general because those testing limits are very complicated. It's usually for highly compensated employees. And usually if you're one, you get a letter, you know if you can or you cannot. But for most folks who have 401k plans, 403b plans, no matter what age you are, you can defer in 2013, you can defer $17,500. If you are over age 50, you can do the catch-up contribution of $5,500, and that brings us to a total deferral of $23,000 that we can take out of our salary. Some of us only make that much, but if you're, you know, make a lot of money and you've got the means and the cash flow to allow it, you can make these elective deferrals. And by deferral, we mean you put it into your employer plan, and now you're not going to pay income tax on it, at least for federal purposes. You will be subject to paying tax on those amounts for Pennsylvania purposes. And I could talk more about that after the break. If you have questions, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. Any condition is accepted. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Welcome back, everyone. And this is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Today's July 10th. We're talking about catching up in a lot of different ways. The first way was catching up on your retirement accounts. They started this several years ago to try to help people kind of save a little bit faster. Maybe people weren't saving as fast as they should. So they made a rule that said if you're over 50, you can do these catch-up contributions. And that rule has just kind of stuck. So for those people who are over 50, you have a catch-up contribution, but it's the elective deferral is really so high for a lot of people already that even if you're over age 50, maybe adding that elective or the catch-up contribution is probably or could be even more than you would normally do. Where it's a good idea to kind of implement something like this would be if you are a husband and wife and both are earning and you get increases so that you don't start spending your increases if you have not saved enough for retirement prior. This is a great way to kind of catch up and try to quick stash some money while you're both working. So kind of get in the habit of not spending more than you're making. Don't even spend what you're making and take the time to save. So those are the catch-up contributions for 401ks, 403bs. Again, the elective deferral, $17,500. Catch-up contributions of $5,500. You can do $23,000. Remember I mentioned the simple plan, a simple IRA or a simple 401k? They permit catch-up contributions up to $2,500 in 2013. So the other one was $5,500. This is $2,500. And keep in mind the normal salary reduction for contributions in a simple plan, they're not treated as catch-up until they exceed $12,000. So the regular elective deferral for a simple plan is $12,000, and then you can do the $2,500. There's a special rule for people who have 403B plans. 403B plans, very similar to 401K plans nowadays. Where we see 403Bs are typically like nonprofits, hospitals, you know, those types of organizations. 403B has a special catch-up, which you don't hear about very often. And frankly, I'm not sure I even have noticed or seen it on anybody's W-2, but it applies to employees with at least 15 years of service. You may be eligible to make additional contributions to a 403B plan in addition to the regular catch-up for participants who are over age 50. All right, so if permitted by the 403B plan, so you have to make sure your 403B plan adopted this application. It says, if permitted by the 403B plan, an employee who has at least 15 years of service with a public school system, hospital, home health service agency, health and wealth service agency, church or convention, blah, 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 has a 403B elective deferral limit that is increased by the lesser of $3,000 or $15,000 reduced by the amount of additional elective deferrals made in prior years. They don't make this easy, folks. Or $5,000 times the number of the employee's years of service for the organization minus the total elective deferrals made for earlier years. I'm not even going to repeat any of that. Just know that if you've been employed with one of these types of organizations that has a 403B plan, and the plan permits these special catch-up contributions, you have the money available, the cash available, the cash flow available, you might want to consider whether you should consider doing these additional catch-ups. So in one of the examples they had, they said that Pat had an elective deferral on her 403B plan of $17,500 plus $3,000. because of her 15 years of service. And then the employer had done some contributions. So there's also a total max that you have to be aware of. But then Pat could also defer an additional $5,500. So, you know, she got the extra $3,000, something you might want to look at if you have the cash flow. You know, let me mention something that sometimes people don't think about, and it's a little bit of an oddity. But let's say you inherit some money and you have not previously maxed out a 401k or a retirement account. This might be an opportunity to do it. Let me give you an example. If you inherit some money from a parent, and let's say you get $100,000 of, you know, cash, brokerage, whatever, $100,000 monetary value of something, and there may not be income tax on that, because if it's principal you're inheriting, you're not going to have to pay income tax, maybe. It depends on the nature. I'm not going to get into the complications of that. But let's say you have $100,000 after tax that you get, you put it in your bank account. If you are making $100,000 in wages and you've never maxed out your 401k plan before, maybe you put $10,000 in and you're over 50. And I told you could do like $23,000, right? So if you put in $10,000, so you have $100,000 of wages, you put $10,000 into your 401k, now you have $90,000 of taxable wages. And you've never done more because you never had money before. This year, what you could do is say, listen, I'm going to max out my 401k now to $23,000. I'm going to shelter $23,000 from tax, which is $13,000 more than I had prior. And now I'm going to have a smaller paycheck. I'm going to have less cash flow. I'm going to use the money from the inheritance to take care of my cash flow, while at the same time saving money. So I put the 13, so I have the same amount of money. I've saved 13,000. I've used 13,000 from the inheritance. It kind of offsets each other. I have the same amount of money, but now I've just saved the income tax on $13,000. All right. So you have to take advantage of those opportunities when you get inheritances. If you've not maxed out a 401k, that might be something to consider, whether or not that makes sense for you, if you don't need the money for anything else. Now, I'm going to talk about credit cards in a minute. If I knew you had credit cards, I'd probably tell you to take care of that first. So I want to talk about credit cards in just a sec. If you have questions this evening, the phone number to call is 610-758-8810. We are live. You can call and ask questions on air. It could be about financial planning, retirement accounts, taxes, whatever. We'll see what we can do to help you answer them. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. We're talking about catching up tonight, catching up on retirement accounts, catching up on credit cards, catching up with relatives, and catching up with some new tax, what will be tax changes for some people when we talk about the revocation, I guess, of the Defense of Marriage Act. So we are coming up to a next break. So I'll give the phone number again, 610-758-8810. Jeff, can we start the break now? Okay, back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 85 degrees under overcast skies. Tonight, showers likely, lows around 70. Thursday, heavy rain expected, highs around 84. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, scattered showers expected each day with high temperatures around 85 degrees. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back, folks. We are talking about catching up tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, or through email, yourfinancialchoices.com. Recap quick. Regular elective deferrals to 401k, 403b, 457b, $17,500. If you're over 50, you can do catch-up contributions of $5,500, barring any other limitations. That equals $23,000. If you're a simple 401k, simple IRA, elective deferrals $12,000, catch-up contribution $2,500. If you have a 403b plan and you've worked for one of these organizations for more than 15 years, you have an additional catch-up contribution you may be eligible for if your plan allows, etc. That could be up to another $3,000 a year for X number of years until you cap out the catch-up. If you have an IRA, your catch-up amount is $1,000 for 2013. The regular IRA contributions, I think, are at $5,000. So plus that $1,000 catch-up, we're looking at $6,000, I believe. All right. So that is IRA catch-ups. Now, show's going pretty fast. If you have questions, give us a call, 610-758-8810. Let's talk about credit cards for a minute. And why did that stick out with me when I thought of the catchphrase of catch-up? Well, I think whenever someone has a chance to catch up on credit card payments, you ought to do that because credit cards cost us so much money. So when we're looking at credit cards, folks, I don't know if people always understand quite the impact of what's going on with credit cards. Let me give you some little facts that I got off of a website, consolidatedcredit.org, and I'm going to go through some of these and then give you an example of how much of a difference it can make in a credit card payment by you paying extra. All right. So from consolidatedcredit.org, Americans as consumers are still facing serious problems with debt, and the average credit card debt per household is $6,600. However, if you count only households that use credit cards, then that average credit card debt is $15,799. It's a lot of money. The average consumer has an average of 3.5 credit cards. And prior to 2008, the average was more like 5.5 credit cards. So what happened since the economic downturn, fewer households carry more, you know, multiple cards. There are 178 or so million credit card cardholders in the U.S. The average age to get a first credit card is now 20.8 years. Crazy low numbers. Although I did see a statistic that the younger people did not carry a balance as much as the older people. Average credit card interest rate as of November 2011 was 12.36%. Sometimes these statistics are a little older because it takes a while for them to gather them. But I'll tell you, I pay off my credit card every single month, and I'm pretty sure I looked at the interest rate, and I think the interest rate was either 24%, 23.9, Jeff just said. So when they say that these are the average credit card interest rates of 12.3, I haven't seen that in years. So unless they're averaging it with those credit cards that they use to entice people at 0%, sometimes you'll get something in the mail that says, you know, 0% interest rate. The issue you have to be careful of is that they switch it to a higher rate if you're late on your payments and things like that. There were all kinds of new credit card rules that came through, I think it was back in 2009, the Credit Card Act, and then they were implemented over time, like 2010, 2011. I did a whole show on that, and I'd have to go back into the archive to see, like, all the data on that. Excuse me. But just be aware that the credit card rates I'm seeing are a little bit higher if you are offered the opportunity to have a 0% card, unless you're someone who pays off credit cards rather quickly, I'm not sure I would, you know, take the risk of having a credit card that will switch to a higher rate if you're late on payment. All right. We did have a question come in off air. Ralph in Bethlehem said, kids in college this year didn't save a lot for this prior, but has income approaching $200,000. Are there pre-tax savings opportunities to take advantage of? Ralph, what you might be talking about, I'm trying to think if you're going to talk about ways to qualify for financial aid or opportunities to save for college at this point. If the kids are already in college and you didn't save a lot prior, that is telling me that you probably are going to be paying for college two of two ways. You could be just paying for college through cash flow, so you make money and then pay the kids' college tuition, or you could be taking out loans, or the kids could be taking out loans, or some combination thereof of you paying some and the kids taking out some loans. As far as tax saving opportunities, you might argue whether this makes sense to do at this point, but if you were to make contributions to a college savings plan, a 529 account, by putting money into a 529 account in Pennsylvania, we get a deduction on our Pennsylvania return. We have to have income or earnings, and we cannot take more than the annual gift amount. So the annual gift amount in 2013, I think we're still at $14,000. If you had one child, and in 2013 you put $14,000 into a 529 account for them, you would get a deduction on your Pennsylvania return. If you're telling me you're making this kind of money, you would get a $14,000 deduction. If you are married, Ralph, and you and your wife both put in $14,000, so it's a joint gift, you put in $28,000, you actually could get a deduction for $28,000 because you each get to put in $14,000 for any child. Now, your wife would have to have earnings or income, though, of that amount in order to get the deduction. So if you told me your wife didn't work at all, then you could still put in $28,000, but you're only going to get the deduction on your Pennsylvania return for the $14,000 up to the amount that you would be allowed to gift and the amount of income. All right. So that savings by making that contribution to a 529 on your Pennsylvania return is 3.07% of the amount you put in. So if you put in $10,000, you're going to save $307. So there is a little bit of a savings there. We don't get a benefit for federal, but we do get a benefit for Pennsylvania. Now, if your child is just a freshman, you might want to let that money sit in the account and use it their senior year. Then you could have a chance to earn money on it. If you then take that money out the senior year and use it in the same year you have a tuition payment, so it's a qualified distribution for qualified tuition, then any earnings are not taxable. They're not income taxable if you take it out for as a qualified education expense. So there could be a little savings there too. At this point, what you have to ask yourself, Ralph, is if you have the money, if it makes sense to put it in and then have to take it right back out. Kind of depends. I'll let you think about that for a little bit. But there could be savings there for you, if you understand. Now, the other thing it might do for you is when you go to file for financial aid, with this amount of income, you may not qualify for financial aid at all. Your income looks a little high. May not qualify for financial aid. Depends on what school you're going to, what school your kids are going to, if it's a private institution or not, and how they calculate financial aid packages for your student. If you qualify, you might not qualify for financial aid as far as like grants and awards that you don't have to pay back, but you may qualify for some student loans. They may be subsidized. They may be unsubsidized. Again, I think your income might be too high to have a subsidized loan, but you might have an unsubsidized loan, which may or may not be a lower rate of interest than you could get like on a personal loan with your bank. So you want to look at those strategies as well. All right, Ralph. Oh, and but by reducing your assets, if you put money into the 529, that asset then would not be deemed 100% available for college cost, like cash in a bank account, you know, might count more than money in a 529 account. Okay, we're at the half hour break. We will continue our discussion when we get back. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about catching up. I thank Ralph for calling in. If you have questions, you can call in at 610-758-8810 or yourfinancialchoices.com if you prefer email. Now, we're talking a little bit about credit cards and some of the statistics around credit cards. We were just debating the average credit card interest rate. I'm pretty sure they're averaging zero with 24% to get this average of 12. But one of the things I ran through a calculator, bankrate.com is a website that has, you know, various information about mortgage interest rates and credit cards and things like that. But on there, there was a credit card calculator, and it says the true cost of paying the minimum. So if you are someone who has credit card debt that runs balances and you just pay the minimum amount each month, you might want to go on bankrate.com and run through this calculator, because it's powerful for you to see it and the importance of paying off credit cards sooner than later. So what I ran through was, I said there was a credit card balance of $10,000 and the interest rate on the credit card was 24%. The minimum payment calculated, I just used a drop down. There's a number of drop down options. It could be 2%, 5%, whatever the minimum payment is on your credit card, how that company calculates your minimum payment. I used the first one that was there, and it said interest plus 1% of balance. All right. And the minimum payment came up as $300. And then I said, what fixed payment could you make each month? So I said $500. All right, so the interest would have been about $200. The 1% of balance was about $100. So the minimum payment, $300. Fixed payment was $500. And according to this calculator, and I didn't verify it separately, but it said if you did the fixed payment of $500, so I'm paying more than I need to on the minimum, on a $10,000 balance, it would take 26 months to pay off the debt, which is just a little more than 2 years, and the interest that I would have paid on that would be $2,898. If I just paid the minimum, it would take 354 months, which I think I calculated was about 20 years. And it's like a mortgage. That's right. And you would pay, to pay off your debt, you would pay $19,332. So I think that must include the interest as well on that. But these are some crazy numbers. It doesn't sound like it's that big of a jump, which is what surprised me, going from 300 to 500. I didn't think it was such a big jump to make such a difference in the numbers. So you really need to be aware of your interest rate, your minimum payments, how they're being calculated, and know that you can always pay more. You can always pay extra. You can always pay the full balance. You don't have to pay just the minimum balance. And I, excuse me, I know it's tempting to do that, but do your best to try to catch up on those credit cards, folks. Okay? Phone number, again, is 610-758-8810. Kind of losing my voice, so if anybody has questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We're live in the studio and happy to take any calls. Let's talk a little bit now about catching up with family members. What I would like to emphasize here is the conversations that you should be having with family members, in particular, family members that may rely on you for support, support in the way of financial support or family support. And what I mean by family support is being a guardian or a caregiver. So we're talking about a guardian maybe for minor children, or a caregiver for an elderly parent or an elderly aunt. Have you had conversations with your family members about these issues? One of the reasons this came up, I was just on vacation and with a lot of family. I actually don't get vacations, folks. I get family reunions. That's what it feels like, always going to family reunions. Luckily, I love both sides of my family. I love my husband's family and I love my family. But there's a lot of family on both sides. So lots of different issues come up, you know, and the beauty of having a big family is you learn how to get along with a lot of different people. You also realize all the quirkiness that people can have, all the different health issues people can have, different behaviors. So you have to kind of learn to adjust and work with a lot of different people. But let's talk about what some of these conversations are going to look like with your family members. For example, hey, Mom and Dad, have you and Dad thought about what might happen if either of you need nursing home care? What will that look like? Can you afford it? Have you seen an attorney? Do you need to do some estate planning? So those are conversations that some people might shy away from. I'm not shy, so I don't shy away from these things. I know what my mother says. My mother says, oh, no, I'm not going in a nursing home. Oh, no, with her Canadian accent. Oh, no, I'm not going in a nursing home. So we have to draw straws. No, I'll take my mother anytime. But you have to be prepared. If you're going to make those kinds of commitments and make those kinds of statements, you have to be prepared what that is going to mean to you. And if it's going to be some financial effort on your part, do you have the financial means to make those statements? Yeah, Mom, sure, I'll take you. Well, if not, then you've got to find out, you know, Mom, I'd love to help you and take care of you. But if it comes to the point where you're going to need kind of extra skilled care, and I may not be able to provide that, I may not be able to lift you or move you around, we may have to hire someone. What do your finances look like that if we need to do that, are we going to have the means to be able to do that? These are very rational, good discussions to have, and it can prompt some really good planning opportunities before it's too late so that you're being proactive, not reactive. It should also be a great opportunity to have conversations with your parents about what they want the family to retain. Does it mean something to them to retain certain property? If you're going to be a power of attorney for your parents, do they want you to hold on to the family, you know, AT&T stock or the land or the summer vacation home? And if they do want you to hang on to those kinds of things, is it even a practical request? Meaning, if there is some kind of a real estate that they would like you to hold, is there going to be enough money to pay the real estate taxes? Is the property going to go into a trust? How is that going to be managed? Are there certain antiques that they want kind of passed down to the next generation, or jewelry? If they have a special painting, have they identified the individuals they want to get these items? Have they identified it in their will? Have they let their attorney know? If you're going to be the executor, did they give you a list? You want to make sure that these things are all identified, that because if Mom or Dad has said to, you know, Bobby, hey, Bobby, you're getting that, you know, $500,000 painting, And they die. And Bobby said, Mom and Dad always said I was going to get that painting. And he comes looking for it, and it's nowhere to be found. And that's because Susie snuck into the house and took the painting. You've got to have these conversations. So this is, we're talking about catching up and catching up with families and having those important conversations around the expectations that might be made or that other family members might have for you. What about, you know, a sibling? And a sibling wants you to be the guardian of their children if something happens to them. So sis says, hey, Lori, will you be guardian of my children? My sister doesn't have children, so I don't have that issue. But other siblings-in-law have those questions. And you, of course, are always, well, I am anyway, happy to help if that were ever to happen. And usually it's a very remote chance that anything would happen to your siblings when they're young and when they have children, little children. But you still have to plan for these things. I did, you know, I knew who was going to take my children if anything happened to me. I also made sure that I had plenty of life insurance that should something happen, that my brother, who I identified would take care of my children, would have enough money to raise them, house them, and pay for their education. Because that's the other thing you have to consider. If you are asking a sibling to be the guardian of your children, and you have three children, and they're little, and your sibling lives in a two-bedroom house, what are they going to do about caring for your children? Are they going to have the means to accommodate that larger family and take care of that larger family? So there are lots of things to consider when we are talking about family relationships and what we are asking of our other family members. For example, healthcare directives. If you've named a sibling or a parent, or maybe you're older already and you've named a child to be your agent for healthcare directives, do they know that they are the agent? Now, there are lots of updated laws. Pennsylvania has, you know, some, it's been several years now. But if you have not updated your estate planning documents in a long time, it might be time to call your attorney and ask them about updating them, because quite often they will have the agents sign off acknowledging that they're aware of this and they know about this responsibility. So you might want to look at updating your documents and making sure that the person that you're asking to serve in that capacity are willing to. Because here's the other thing. If, for example, you have a living will and you say, I don't want any extreme measures taken. If I become critically ill, I don't want life support, I don't want food, I don't want water. You want to make sure that the person that you've identified as your, you know, your health directive agent, that they understand that and that they're in accord with you, because you don't want someone walking in at the last minute unaware of this and saying, oh my gosh, no, I could never do that to Mom. You know, I could never take her off life support, you know, if that's not what your wish is. So you certainly need to have some of these conversations. So at your next reunion, your next vacation, I want you to get caught up with your family members and relatives and talk about some of these items that we're talking about. We're coming up on our last break. When I come back, I'm just going to wrap up this section of the catching up, talking about executor responsibilities and trustee responsibilities, what they are, and whether or not it makes sense to have a family member help with those. If you have questions, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you, your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. Folks, the time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to our program.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. We're wrapping up. We've got 15 minutes left. If you have questions, you can call in live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. We're talking about catching up tonight. Let me quickly recap some of the things we've already mentioned. The reason I recap is radio. People listen in snippets, maybe. I'd like you to listen to the whole show, but if you haven't had a chance to, I like to recap every now and then. And having said that, I'm going to mention the catch-up contributions for retirement accounts again in 2013. The elective deferral, the normal deferral, is $17,500. The catch-up contribution, if you're over age 50, is $5,500. So you can make, if you're over age 50, deferrals to your 401k, 403b, or 457b in the amount of $23,000 in 2013 and avoid income tax on that currently. It doesn't mean you don't have to pay income tax on it eventually. You do when you go to take the money out. We get that deferral on the federal level, not on the Pennsylvania level, and that's because when we take the money out of our accounts when we retire, they are not subject to income tax in Pennsylvania. They will be only for federal. The simple IRA contribution, $12,000. The catch-up contribution, $2,500. And if you are a participant in a 403b plan with more than 15 years of, or at least 15 years of service, you may be eligible to make additional contributions on top of the ones I previously mentioned. I talked about credit card payments and how it can make such a difference by putting just a little bit extra each month on your payment. If you do just the minimum payments, it is going to take you many, many years to pay back if you're only doing minimum payments, and it's going to cost you a lot in interest. Bite the bullet, pay extra, and get rid of that debt a lot faster. We also talked about catching up with family members and what the expectations might be for caregiving for parents, aged parents, or guardians, children, etc., taking care of healthcare directors for folks. Have those conversations. Talk about what the expectations are and what that might look like if you're going to be responsible for the caregiving of an elderly parent or for a young child. Is there going to be the financial means available that you might need to take care of their needs? Okay. So we can do take care of financial needs by doing some pre-planning, usually working with your attorney and your financial advisor. Might be able to help protect some assets. Again, unless you've had the conversations, you're not going to know if there needs to be some planning done. It also could give you ample opportunity to review insurance and using life insurance, term insurance, whole life insurance could give you a lot of security in making sure if something happens to you that you are providing some means to the person who is going to end up taking care of either your children or your surviving spouse if they're elderly. Okay. Phone number 610-758-8810. One of the biggest things we ask family members to do as well when, you know, we're doing our estate planning is to serve in the capacity of an executor or a trustee if we have a trust. So at the time you're thinking about updating your documents or writing your documents, you want to consider what your options are, understand what their responsibilities are going to be, discuss it with them, and discuss it with your attorney. Usually you want to always have an alternate. So you might say, I name my spouse as my executor, and if my spouse doesn't survive me, then I name my, daughter Sally, and if Sally can't do it, then my daughter Lauren, if my daughter can't do it, my son Kyle. Or it might not go that way at all. It might be, if my spouse can't do it, my brother Mark. So those are kind of the hoops you have to jump through to kind of go through who you would want to take care of things for you, should you die and die prematurely. So if you're young right now and you have not had a will drafted, you want to do that, because if you're working, you might have life insurance, you might have a pension, you might have a 401k plan at work. You need to understand where all those assets are going to go and how they're going to get there, if it's by beneficiary designation, by joint titling, or through your will. So a will can be a catch-all for those assets that aren't otherwise disposed through beneficiary designations, etc. So you want to make sure that your executor understands your wishes, is willing to do it. It can be a lot of work, especially if you have accounts all over the place and, you know, personal property all over the place, lots of cars, if you have a house, the house has to be sold, cleaned up, you know, just it's more responsibility, I think, than some people realize. So you also then, when you're having these conversations with people, say, you know, what are you doing? You know, if you want me to be your executor, brother or sister, what are we doing to make sure that we have things organized so that it's not complicated, so nothing's missing, there's no questions? Do we know where the stock certificates are, if there are any? Do we know where the brokerage accounts are, the bank accounts? Do we know passwords to, you know, getting access to your computer? So you want to have those kinds of conversations as well. And are they going to be competent to manage the assets in the estate until they're eventually distributed? Are they going to get along with your beneficiaries? Are the responsibilities detailed and outlined in your will and or your trust? Has your attorney explored all of those management provisions that they need to and how they will impact your representative in those documents? Okay, so that's catching up. Let me mention too, while I was away, the Defense of Marriage Act had been declared unconstitutional. Committed same-sex couples who are legally married in their own states can now receive federal protections like Social Security, veterans benefit, health insurance, and retirement savings. So I think this is really something that's important. I don't know where I just pulled this up. I had looked this up before I came in, and I apologize where I must have gotten this off of some site as far as what the benefits may be. So what this says is this grants legally married same-sex couples the same benefits received by their straight peers, including health insurance and pension protections for federal employee spouses, Social Security benefits for widows and widowers, support and benefits for military spouses, joint income tax filing and exemption from federal estate taxes, immigration protections for binational couples. So those are some of the benefits that will be received by legally married same-sex couples. So I believe your state has to recognize same-sex marriage. And if your state recognizes it, then the federal government is going to recognize it. So it opens the window for a lot of benefits for committed couples that otherwise were not there. And I think it was brought, the case was brought by a woman who I think lost a benefit of the federal exemption with her long-term partner slash spouse. And that benefit was the marital exemption for federal estate taxes. So I think it was costing her like $300,000 that benefit would have been available if they were a heterosexual couple. So that was a little interesting. So we're talking about catching up. We have 5 minutes left. My voice is completely giving out. I have to think of what I'm going to do on next week's show. Someone should call 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So catching up with the relatives. Another thing that you need to be aware of, again, as I said, is if you have a sibling that has minor children that they have asked you to be the guardian of, You definitely want to make sure that they have their documents in order, and you might also want to ask for a copy of those documents. What you don't want to have happen is you have the expectation that you're going to be the guardian for the niece or the nephew, and something tragic happens to your, you know, brother, sister, in-law, such that now it springs in. Now someone, you know, this little minor child needs a guardian. And all of a sudden, grandma and grandpa think they want to take the minor child because they're grandma and grandpa. So you don't want any confusion. In particular, you don't want any confusion when minor children are involved. So you definitely have to have the conversations. If someone has asked you to be the guardian in the event anything unforeseen should happen to that parent, then you want to make sure that documents are in order. Is there going to be some life insurance that will help support that child? Maybe there isn't any life insurance. Are you going to have the financial means to be able to take care of that child? And if not, what are you going to do about it? What are your options at this point? Is there going to be an estate settlement? Who's going to be in charge of settling the estate? Are you going to be the guardian, but maybe not the executor, maybe not the trustee? That's why it's really important to have these conversations. You also want to make sure that your siblings maybe aren't putting you in without discussing it with you. You know, I have several siblings, and I sometimes have wondered, who's going to be the guardian of their children? If I've asked Brother Mark to be the guardian of my children, who's going to be the guardian of his children? Well, it's not a matter of point anymore. His children are adults. But if you're going one way, how is the other going? And you just want to make sure that you understand how that will work. I think next week, one of the things I could talk about is just that. Maybe I will have a show on guardianship and how we need to structure that. And then also looking at various ways to make sure that that is done properly by using trust, and how that should be structured, looking at what is it the best age to have distributions to minor children once they become adults. Should that be at age 21? Should that be at age 25? Let's have some conversations about that, and also about maybe some of the management provisions that I mentioned earlier that we would use in an estate or trust. For example, if you have a minor child that now has come under the care of your sibling, you're gone, you're dead, and you might have had a $500,000 life insurance policy, and it went into trust, and maybe at 21 you wanted your minor child, at when they became an adult, to get that money. But maybe it's been 10 years since you died, and that child's like a mess and terrible and acting up. Maybe you want to give your trustee the discretion to maybe make some decisions about not paying that out at 21. So you want to write your documents flexible enough. I'm not an attorney, but we can certainly talk about some of the conversations that you would have around that. Okay, so we'll do that next week. I want to thank Jeff for being here. Thank Judy Ann for being here. Thank you, Ralph, for calling in. I appreciate it. Thank you, listeners. And we have Tom Druckenmiller coming up next, I think, within the tradition folk music. I didn't see Tom come in, but I'm going to assume he's here. Remember, folks, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week. And we're going to go out with a little bit of music tonight to wind things up. Have a good night.